Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
She was already accused of murdering her husband with five times the lethal dose of fentanyl. And now Corey Richens been hit with 26 new felony charges. Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the show that brings you the very best guests in all of true crime. So the news for Corey Richens, who was supposed to stand trial at the end of April, just seems to be getting worse. She is now set to stand trial at the beginning of 2026. And here to get us all caught up is the one and only Gigi G-Money McKelvey, host of Pretty Lies and Alibis. Most important question, Gigi, how is Grammy doing? I know she's had a difficult couple of days.
She's doing much better. I got a call my last night in Phoenix that they were taking her to the hospital by ambulance. So I got the red eye out. Worst night of my life on the plane, watching these results come in through my chart. But after a stay in ICU and a procedure, she's back home and doing great. So very thankful for that. And thank you for asking.
Happy to ask. Happy that she is doing well. So prosecutors, Gigi, say that Corey forged documents, laundered money, issued bad checks. This is all on top of the homicide charges, even defrauding her own friend, which I guess is no real surprise since she's accused of killing her own husband. All doing this while plotting to kill husband Eric. The new charges here, the prosecutors at least, reveal a woman who they say was on the quote unquote brink of financial collapse, forging her way through these real estate loans and funneling money through multiple accounts, all again while setting the stage for her husband's death. So you and I talked about this. They're going to be separate trials, one on the money end of things, the other on the murder trial. But in terms of the financial crimes, things are just going from bad to worse for her. Not that the murder, you know, charges aren't bad enough, but tell us what we know so far about these financial crimes and the new charges piling up.
Yeah, so there were 26 new charges added to murder, which, I mean, like you say, it just gets worse. Now, those will be severed. The judge did approve a severance a while back, and that these new charges will be part of that. But, I mean, like you say, I mean, she's defrauding her friend. She's robbing Peter to pay Paul almost on a daily basis. It had to be exhausting to try to figure out how do you get the money to pay this hard money lender. It's just a big mess. I mean, millions of dollars. And to me, it really lends to motive. I know that her defense team wanted it severed. I'm sure the state wanted this to come in. I'm not sure how much of this they'll be able to bring in. You know, the one thing that always stood out to me is Eric Richens did not want her to buy this unfinished mansion. It was over $1 million. It wasn't finished. It was going to take a lot of money to get that thing ready for market. And get this, she signed on that the day after she killed him, allegedly. It's just insane. It's forgery. It's her writing checks that she knew she didn't have money in her accounts to pay for. And she was taking the header of her realty business or her bank accounts and inserting Eric's financial bank statements in there to make it look like she had a lot of money because he was doing very, very well with his masonry business. And she was just taking his balances and it worked for a while. I mean, they were giving her money, although there were times where certain lenders were a little puzzled at how her credit was so bad. You know, they were like, you have all this money when really she didn't. There were times that bank account was down to 50 bucks or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like a Miami style scheme where I'm coming from. But you said robbing Peter to pay Paul, that's essentially a Ponzi scheme, which is sort of what she got herself involved with. A lot of people don't remember this either, but basically, after news of the death of Eric, there was like a family gathering, and that's when Eric's sister informed Corey that she's been written out of the will, and Corey tried to beat her up. They got into like a physical altercation. So this is not a woman with a healthy mind. But Gigi, the thing that kind of freaks me out, and I've said this on Surviving the Survivor, when you look at a photo of Corey Richens, she almost looks like a choir girl. She just looks like the most harmless, you know, sort of naive looking person that anyone can come across. Apparently she was working, like literally working for an hourly wage, which obviously that is the American way. You got to work hard. But she was working at a Home Depot when Eric caught her eye, apparently, because she knew this guy was coming in doing his masonry work and was making a killing in his business. And maybe was sort of, quote unquote, hunting him because of his financial resources. But I mean, I guess, you know, neither of us are psychologists, but what do you make of her? Like, if it wasn't Eric, would this be happening? And by the way, she had a boyfriend too. But I mean, would this be happening with sort of anyone that you think she was with just because she's got this really demented, depraved mind, I guess?
You know, it's hard to know, but you would have to have some sort of assets to even really get started. You would have to have your startup money, and to start taking out all these loans, you know, you would need to show that you have the means to pay these loans back. Now with Eric, they had the home, which was his. Part of the prenup was that home remained his. But I mean, I don't think you're working at Home Depot. And look, people rise up from a job at Home Depot and become very successful, but usually not by riding on the coattails of anybody else. These are people that work 2 and 3 jobs that save their money to be able to start a business. You know, I really do think that, and I do believe the Richens family were very well known there. They've been there for generations, so I'm sure it's no secret to her that Eric was a very successful guy. And I might add, a very kind-hearted guy. I've heard stories about things he did anonymously, just out of the goodness of his heart, for kids and things like that. But unfortunately, it seems to me she had other intentions when she married him. And then, you know, when you start having kids, it sort of solidifies you're going to have some sort of financial stability in the future if something happens to the marriage, whether by divorce or, in this case, unfortunately, you allegedly kill your husband. So for me, I kind of just saw her as a snake in the grass, you know, waiting to strike. And unfortunately, she found a very good guy who had a lot of money to do so. And he was so mindful of that, you know, that's why he started his trust in the event something happened to him. He wanted to make sure his boys were taken care of. And that's why he gave it to his sister, because I think he saw the road she was going down and knew if she wanted to, she'd drain him of everything he had worked hard for.
Yeah, what's crazy, which I think a lot of people forget a lot of the details of this case because it's been lingering for so long. But on the Valentine's Day before, which is just a few months, maybe 2 months before he actually was killed, she tried poisoning him then. So she had tried it a time before. And maybe, you know, I don't know, but maybe Eric was just too kind and just didn't see it coming again. But unfortunately, she was really successful the second time around. Also, we've got that walk the dog letter, which we can get into in a few minutes. But essentially, while she was in jail, which she still is, she was working on some alibi with her mom and her brother to basically talk about what she was doing. And it was anything but trying to poison him. And then you've got the mother, whose last name is Darden, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. And she lost, she was openly gay, but lost her partner in a similar kind of way, which makes you wonder what's going on in this family. Now, the mother's never been charged, so, you know, these are allegations, but apparently it was pretty similar. But back to the these added charges, because it's really the headline of the show, and then we'll, you know, spend some time on this, break down a few other things, and we will rock and roll out of here, because I know we both had long days and you know, we'll wrap it quicker than a typical Surviving Survivor. But new charges here: 5 counts, second degree felony mortgage fraud; 7 counts, second degree felony money laundering; 5 counts, third degree felony forgery; 7 counts, third degree felony issuing a bad check; 1 count, second degree felony communications. And the list goes on. There's another one here, a pattern of unlawful activity. I think this goes back all the way to like 2019 when she starts stealing from Eric Richens' business. I guess my question, I don't know if you know the answer, but I'm just wondering, why these added charges now after all this time? You think it was just a matter of getting the sort of the accounting straight for investigators, or were they just sitting on this? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure, but I think that when you are dealing with multiple financial institutions to get the search warrants and then get all of that returned, and then you have to have a forensic accountant look at that. They had one testify at one of her hearings previously. I'm sure it's just a lot of math, which Joel, I could never do. I suck at math. But, you know, I think these things take a while to sort of trace. Where did this money go into this account? She even transferred money to her mother in the midst of all this, $1,000 here and there. So, yeah, I think part of it is just, you know, also these investigators are really busy on the priority case, which is the murder case. And they've had some things going on with the case. It was delayed, as you know. So it could just be that the priority is to get everything in line for her trial for the murder. And then this will be later and separate. So probably a little bit of everything as far as why it took so long. And speaking of the walk the dog letter, I just found in my documents a transcript of a jail call between her and her brother that I'm going to put out later this week, where they're talking about when she got caught with that. And she was explaining to them, to him, it was her novel and they took it. And he was telling her it was blowing up in the news or something.
Yeah. And people forget that too. She wrote the children's book. I'm just blanking on the title right now, but she wrote the children's book about kids grieving the loss of their father, and then went on those local Salt Lake City shows, which is just crazy. But, you know, by the way, we have Greg Skordis on the show all the time, who's a Utah-based criminal defense attorney who started as a public defender, one of the nice guys you'll ever meet. And he's representing the Richens family, and they're obviously heartbroken. And every time we have him on to discuss this, you know, he says that the kids are doing well, the three boys, but that they are obviously aching from the pain of not having their father. So you and I see this way too often, where it's that ripple effect of the violence. But back to the financial crimes, the prosecutors here say that Corey Richens forged a power of attorney and used these altered bank documents for these fraudulent mortgage loans. I mean, do you think this was a case of the pressure became too much? She thought she was getting, you know, money in some sort of inheritance, and that was the tipping point. That's what caused her to murder Eric. So in other words, what were the financial crimes the motive to kill, or do you think that was going to happen either way?
You know, for me, if I'm the prosecution, it makes a lot of sense if they're able. Now, that's something I don't know. Can they bring in these financial crimes as motive? But she got to a point to where it was impossible. She was going under, and I don't think Eric had a clue of how bad it was for her and this business she had. Maybe for a while she thought, hey, something big's going to happen. It's going to turn around. I'm going to make a huge sale and this will go away. But when you are writing bad checks on a consistent basis, you're taking out more hard money loans to pay for other hard money loan installments. I really think it got to a point to where, in her twisted mind, allegedly, that the only answer was to kill her husband and get the inheritance. Because in her mind, she stood to gain millions when in reality, it was way less. And the trust would have taken care of the boys. So I think had she known that he had done this without her knowledge, which is give his sister control of his finances, I don't think he would be dead.
Yeah. By the way, the boys are with Eric's family, so they're being, you know, well taken care of. But you lose a father and now they're going to lose a mother, like, more, you know, 99%. This woman is going to get convicted, I have no doubt. But
oh, yeah.
So I'm really just learning tonight about the defrauding of this close friend. Do you have any more information on that, who this person was? I mean, that's kind of a new level of betrayal. Not only is she killing her husband, which is about as awful as it gets, but she's also essentially cheating, lying, and stealing from one of her good friends.
Yeah, really all I know is what was in the filing, which is her friend essentially signed a lease-to-own agreement with Corey for this house, and at one point wrote her a check for $40,000 or maybe even a little more as part of, I guess, a down payment, and Corey turned around and spent the money. And ultimately, her friend and her family were evicted from the home. I mean, it doesn't get any worse, you know, as far as being a friend to sabotage your friend like that, knowing full well you don't, you know, that money should have went to the house. But she was so in deep that she was desperate. And I guess everybody was fair game when you get to that point, $40,000, when you're paying sometimes tens of thousands of dollars a week in these hard money loans. I guess you just do anything. And I'm sure when you're in that cycle in the back of your mind, this unfinished mansion, she thought maybe would net her a few million when she sold it once it was finished and furnished or whatever. But it just, it was a domino effect. I mean, it was nonstop. And I have a friend who knows this case very, very well. And kind of at the beginning, she was like, there's going to be some financial stuff that's probably going to be huge. And she was right. Doesn't know Corey, but kind of knew the situation through court filings. And she's very good with real estate money. And it was clear that, you know, I went back and looked at her old website on the Wayback Machine. And it's just interesting to see. You see this bright-eyed girl, you know, attractive in the photo. And you see all these homes she sold. And man, knowing what we know now, it was just this facade for somebody who didn't know what they were doing. I think that real, you know, also real estate there, you know, around that time, 2018, 19, I knew so many people personally who quit their careers and jumped in because at least locally, the housing market, and still is here in Greenville, was booming and people were making bank. But then the market got oversaturated with real estate agents. And then they went back to their old jobs because they weren't experienced enough to know really how to do it. To where people that have been in this 20, 30 years, they can do it in their sleep. And I, you know, you wonder with her, was that the case that she thought this would be a way to make a lot of money really quick and get financially stable for herself? I mean, her marriage was financially stable, but yeah, I mean, clearly she just didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah, it sounds like she just got in. I mean, I'm not making any excuses because this woman appears to be a cold-blooded killer, but maybe she thought that it was a cash grab, like you said. You know, here in Miami, I happen to know some people who are in the cash advance business, which is kind of these hard loans, and it's a shady business. I mean, it's crazy, and they charge these ridiculous, people don't realize it, but like, we're talking like, you know, a typical interest rate might be 8 or 9%. These people are charging like 70% interest rates on the loans that they're giving. So you find yourself like deep, deep in the hole before you can even climb out of it. But
yeah. And sometimes too, like with these advances, I mean, the interest rate can be as high as 199%. I mean, so you're paying, you know, a triple just on the interest and not even touching the principal. I mean, and the bad thing is, like with these title loans, they prey on people who are struggling financially, and they just, you know, it's easy to say, hey, I'll get $1,000. Before you know it, you're paying, you know, $800 a month just on interest. And I mean, they will come after you. I've had people in my neighborhood, you see the tow truck and you're like, ooh, they got one of those loans and it went bad. But yeah, it's really crazy how that goes. And the hard money lenders for these mortgages, they're meant to be short term. These are for people who are experienced that don't want to do your traditional mortgage loans. And they're going to turn these houses really quickly. But with Corey, it wasn't that way. I mean, she had houses that were just sitting there.
Yeah, well, let's not give the COE any ideas. I don't know what she knows about these hard loans, but I don't want her dipping her toes into that. But I guess the question I have, which I think I know the answer to, you know, because of all these new financial charges, is there any scenario where this sort of, I guess, undercuts the murder case where people's attention is now taken away because of the financial crimes? I mean, I assume the murder charges, and I think we're both trying to figure this out, take precedence. It sounds like they're going to be severed. It sounds like the murder charges are going to be dealt with first. But I mean, I personally don't think that the financial crimes are going to undercut the murder charges, because the murder charges are the most serious charges here. But in any way, shape or form, could this in some bizarre way help Corey Richens by taking away the attention from the murder?
I don't think so. I mean, just with my listeners, it's sort of a, I'm not surprised. Nobody was shocked that she did all this. We all knew she was struggling just with what we've heard. And in that one hearing, you did have that financial, the forensic financial person come on and really kind of give a glimpse of how deep she was in. So I really don't think it's going to trump the murder. It's money, a life, it's different zip codes. I think it just goes to show, for me, it really solidifies the motive more than anything. It doesn't lessen it. It just makes more sense now to me. That's and my listeners have kind of echoed the same thing.
Yeah. Usually the listeners are a lot smarter than at least me. I don't know about us.
I got some good listeners. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so do we. The prenup here, the clause says that Eric's business would only go to Corey if he died while married to her. And I guess technically he did, but the rug was still pulled out from under her. What do we know, if anything, about the prenup?
I know that the marital home they were in, he retained that. I believe he had that before they were married. You did have that share in the masonry business. But it was really, you know, it just seemed like an average prenup. There wasn't anything in there that seemed extreme by Eric. It seemed very fair. It was clear that within reason, he was going to take care of her and the kids. I believe they had a kid. Well, they had all their kids when he did the trust. So I think at that point, though, Eric knew enough that she was really getting in deep that, again, he just protected his kids in the future in the event he died. And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, and I appreciate it, he did make a comment to a friend that he thought she was trying to kill him after that Valentine's or something to that effect.
Yeah.
So I think
yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but that was my next question. But I think she actually, if I have this correct, and people can correct me after the fact, but I think she told a friend what he had. It's like a game of telephone. I think she had told a friend what he had reportedly said to a friend, which was, I think my wife tried to poison me. I guess my question is, and I mentioned this earlier, any thoughts on why he didn't seem to take it, I don't want to say more seriously. I don't know what he did, if anything, but it happened on Valentine's Day. And then I think the murder was like within a month or two of that first poisoning. You know, if God forbid my wife tries to poison me, I'm not going to be eating. I'm going to take it pretty seriously. But maybe he just thought there's no way she could actually be doing this. Any thoughts on why he sort of let his guard down?
I think it came down to his boys. I think that he did not want to be away from them. And, you know, we see that a lot in marriages where there's domestic violence. They don't want, you know, sometimes women or men will say, I can't afford to be out. I really just think Eric did not want to ever be away from his boys with shared custody. He wanted to be there 24/7. And I think that if just knowing what I've heard about Eric from people who knew him, that seems like the most likely scenario, because otherwise you would walk. He was a very nice looking guy, seemed to be a sweetheart, and he had money. So I don't think he would have ever struggled to find somebody else. But you throw those kids in there and you just think, you know, you're a dad, you're home with your kids every day, every night. If you couldn't be and you saw them, you know, a quarter of the time you see them now, you know, I think that thought maybe was just too painful for him. So I think if I had to guess, that might be a big reason why he didn't leave her.
Yeah. And that's what Craig Scord is, the family spokesperson who's on the show on STS. He said the same thing. He just, you know, he was super laser focused on taking care of the boys, and that probably blinded him to the fact that she was trying to do all this. Now, she has a pretty crazy search history. We know that's always coming up. When investigators start doing their digital forensics, she Googled, what is a lethal dose of fentanyl? How long does life insurance take to pay? I mean, this is really important stuff in terms of the murder case and building the case in general. But it really shows, Gigi, it shows this premeditation, whether it was because of the financial collapse that she was experiencing or just the fact that she had a personal vendetta against the husband. One thing is for sure, she was planning this. So, you know, it's going to be really hard for her to skirt her way around this once this trial actually gets underway.
No doubt. I mean, she was even Googling prisons, you know, trying to see what I guess she may be in for should she get caught, which she did. Yeah, I mean, look, people still are under. She must not watch a lot of true crime stuff, Joel, because all of us know if you delete it, it ain't going nowhere. Dumb criminals. Yeah, all this is it, to me, it's a pretty slam dunk case. There's not much room for doubt. Also, we don't know all of these text messages between her and the person, the middleman, the supplier that got it for her. There's a lot of things we don't know. I really have a good feeling there's going to be way more damning information that we will learn at trial that will solidify her conviction even more. I don't see any way anybody on a jury, just knowing what we know, and juries are unpredictable. You know, we've seen this lately, but pretty slam dunk. And look, I mean, I'm sure they're going to show these clips of her on these morning shows peddling this book and playing the grieving mother who's just trying to help her boys, and knowing that she was seeking fentanyl and the Michael Jackson drug propofol, which is an anesthetic. They give you that when you're going under anesthesia. There's not much room for doubt. I don't think she's going to be very likable at all, whether it's a man heavy or female heavy jury. I think for men, it's a terrifying thought. And I think for women, it's like you had a good man and you killed him and you acted like you were a grieving mother. She's done. She's toast. Stick a fork in her.
I mean, in general, you think that women are actually tougher on women defendants than the men are. What do you think?
I think so, too. I mean, the one thing you have a hard time doing is fooling another woman with some kind of a grieving woman act. Or if you're just not a good person in general, women typically pick up on it. I think that this kind of thing, this will be the kind of case I think that men and women will on that jury will get very invested in, because it's almost like a movie. You know, it's just you got a rich husband. You've got a woman that wants to make it on her own. She gets in debt. She gets fentanyl, kills her husband, has a boyfriend texting him, you know, right there around the time of the murder. It's I don't think it's going to matter the makeup of the jury. I just think this case is so laid out clearly. I'm sure the prosecutors have things up their sleeve that's going to make it even more of an aha case. So what is it, February for her?
February 2026. Yeah, this coming February is the trial. It was supposed to be supposed to have begun April 28th of 2025, but it got continued. They asked. It seems like every single trial has been continued. I think one of the things that people forget also is that they had a housekeeper, and that housekeeper was, I think, charged and or arrested with supplying some of the fentanyl, which is kind of crazy. She had a drug connection, so I think she is going to turn state's witness. Have you heard anything about that? Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she worked out a deal. And I will say that the woman that was the middle woman, Corey presented this as she had a client who was having some back pain or something to that effect. The housekeeper did not know. And from what I've heard, she keeps Eric's obituary on her mirror. She's so disturbed by it. She had no clue, liked Eric, definitely just, you know, had no idea Corey was getting this to kill Eric. And I think it shook her hard. So I'm sure she's very cooperative. They did go on with the search warrant. I believe she was on probation and they did find some things in there. I'm sure that's something that, you know, potentially investigators worked with of, hey, look, you know, tell us what you know. We might make this go away. But I've heard she is absolutely devastated of what happened.
Yeah, I'm sure she liked Eric and did not see it coming. Probably thought she was going to use the drugs for, you know, like recreational consumption. A couple more things. This is going to be a shorter show than typical. Thank you guys for tuning in. And please remember to hit that like button and subscribe. But let's just get back to the grief book. It was a children's book, and she goes on these local Salt Lake City TV shows, like the morning shows, to pitch this book. I mean, do you think she actually believed that she could control the narrative and that this was going to trick people? She, you know, she does a lot of things that it seems like she thinks are going to outsmart everybody, but are really pretty dumb and transparent after the fact.
Well, I think the fact that she wasn't arrested immediately gave her a sense of comfort and maybe a little, you know, just that mindset of, well, they haven't arrested me, so let me just make it look more like I didn't kill him and write a kid's book. Cause why would a killer write a kid's book and go on a show? You know, I do think that that was part of her thinking, and maybe to make money, you know, I mean, I don't put it past her to just say, hey, I can monetize on the man that I allegedly killed. That's kind of my way of thinking with it. But yeah, I mean, I think she got a little too secure in not being arrested, and, you know, look, everybody believed her, that not everybody, but like the anchors that interviewed her, they talked later and said they were disturbed that they sat there and talked to her when later it comes out, you know, she's been arrested for his murder. And there's a lot of good evidence that she got the fentanyl. And then you hear about that attempt in February. So, yeah, I think it's I guess she fooled certain people. I don't think Eric's family ever really believed her.
Yeah. Prosecutors also, you know, they say that she basically went to this housekeeper after the failed attempt and said, I need something stronger, which is just crazy and bold. And I don't even know if the housekeeper knew what happened the first time around. But to your point, she seems to be devastated, unlike Corey. And then you've got a lot of these searches were done on a burner phone. Anytime you hear burner phone, I'm immediately thinking guilty as soon as the jury finds that out. But it was, what is a lethal dose of fentanyl? How long do life insurance companies take to pay? Can cops uncover deleted messages with an iPhone or on an iPhone? If someone is poisoned, what does it go down on the death certificate as? So I mean, does a jury need anything besides what I just read to you to convict this woman?
I don't think much. I think, you know, in reality, we could probably like open and close this in a day and just hit the important parts. But, you know, I'm sure they have weeks laid out. I'm going to be at that trial for a bit as well, hoping to get there for openings and maybe the first couple of weeks. So I'm very interested to watch it unfold there and at home. I do think that we're in for some surprises and some evidence we have not heard yet. And it's going to be one to watch for sure. A lot of people are interested in this case. Definitely get a lot of views when I do anything on Corey Richens. And for me, it's just one of those cases. It's so brazen and intriguing that I kind of, now that Lori Daybell's over, other than sentencing, I can really start to laser focus on Donna Adelson and Corey Richens, which are two cases that have intrigued me for a very long time.
Yeah, by the way, the state just released their witness list in the Donna Adelson trial and the additional depositions that the defense wants, which I just tweeted out at Podcast STS. So that's interesting. Literally just one or two more things and then we'll wrap it up. But and by the way, you know, I had tickets to go to Park City, Utah in April, and now the trial has been moved to February, which is high season for skiing. So I'm gonna have to wiggle my way into something, because those are gonna be some expensive hotel nights in Park City when this trial kicks off. But I'm planning to go out there as well. So it's gonna be a fascinating trial, and this has been building, and we covered it extensively, and then it kind of fell off the radar just because of all the different delays. But jury selection is set to begin February 10th of 2026, the trial to begin 13 days later on the 23rd, but you just never know if one is going to bleed into another. She's also had issues with her defense team, Gigi. We have Sky Lazaro on the show all the time, who was her first chair, her criminal defense attorney on the case, and she dropped out. It's still a little bit unclear to me why. They also wanted a change of venue here. This judge, by the way, has, number one, the best voice and command of the control of the courtroom that I've ever seen. His name is Judge Richard Mrazek. But they wanted the new defense wanted this case moved to Salt Lake City. He said, no way. I assume we can get an impartial jury in Park City. I forget the name of the county, but they believe that they can get an impartial jury there, I assume.
I think so. I mean, look, here's the thing. There are a lot of people who do not follow true crime, and they don't seek it out. They may see a little blur, but if they don't know the case, they have no idea what's being said. So it's hard to believe. Not everybody consumes it like we do. But you look at all of the different trials, like in the Adelson trial, the previous trials, Lori Daybell, even though that was moved to Boise, When I was in Boise, Joel, I would be out and my Southern accent would give me away a little bit that I wasn't a local. And so they would say, why are you here? And I would tell them, probably more people than not, who's Lori Daybell? Never heard of her. Yeah. So it's possible. You've got people that are young, you know, just now at an age where they can get a jury summons. I think they'll do just fine. It may take some time, but you'll get your 12 and your alternates, and then we will be on the road to justice.
Yeah. Of course, the defense, well, they're going to defense. That's what defense lawyers do. They say, well, it's obvious. It's not that they're saying, but she pleaded not guilty to all the charges so far. I don't know about the additional financial crimes, but her lawyer's also saying, number one, the case is built on circumstantial evidence, no drugs found in the home, and that the housekeeper is likely, quote, according to the defense, lying to receive leniency on her own drug charges. And they say, which I don't think is probably too honest or accurate, that Corey is ready for the truth to come out. We are confident that once the facts are heard, it'll be clear to all that Corey is innocent. I have to say, I think these defense attorneys, with all due respect to defense attorneys, are absolutely delusional. So with that, I'll give you the final word. How does this play out in court? I have no idea. This sounds like a 7 or 8 day trial to me, but like we were just saying, all you have to do is read those searches out loud. It doesn't seem like this defense has much of anything to stand on. What sort of, I guess, defense do you anticipate, if you've even given that any thought? And how do you see this bigger picture playing out in court?
Well, I'm going to be curious to see if they float the theory that was discussed by Corey, I believe, with investigators, maybe family too, that, you know, Eric took these hunting trips to Mexico and maybe he got something there. He did gummies that had marijuana in them, God forbid. You know, I think they're probably going to try to throw it on Eric and say that he willingly took this. But I mean, look, the thing is, he was a hard worker. You can tell when somebody regularly takes fentanyl, they have behavior issues. You know, it's very obvious for somebody who's addicted to that stuff. But I do think they're going to try to throw that blame on Eric completely, because otherwise nobody was in the house but the two of them and their kids. And we could rule the kids out. So I think that's the only way to go. And even then it's a stretch, because you got all this with her asking this woman for fentanyl. And then the second time when it didn't work, like you said, need something stronger. Good luck with that. I mean, I try not to form opinions before these go to trial, but with this one, it's just like, if I sat here and said, I don't have opinion, I'd be lying through my teeth, because I do. And I think it looks bad for her, and they'll throw something against the wall and hope it sticks, but good luck.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. Criminal defense attorneys, when you need one, you know, it's you got to have them. They serve a really important role. But I agree with you, particularly in this case, they're going to try to dirty up Eric Richens, which is just horrible, because that's like pouring salt in the wounds. They're going to say that he was drug addicted. I don't think they're going to have any proof of that. I asked Greg Skordis about that. He says categorically, this guy never touched drugs. No way was he a drug user. But look, the defense is going to say it's he said, she said, he did, she did. And they're going to say, or at least try to intimate that he was a drug user. I'll go on the record as saying I'm going to go with Greg Skordis and agree with what he is telling me, or at least believe what he's telling me, that there's no way. But the defense game gets ugly, and I think it's going to get ugly here. But I think her chances of coming out anything but a loser in this are about zero, next to none. She is going to get convicted on these charges. But I'm with you. I like to stay open-minded, and we've seen crazier things happen. So, G Money, you get the final word. I'm glad Grammy's on the mend. Your final thoughts, it can be about this case or anything else, and then we will say goodbye.
Well, I just have to say, you know, I was thinking about this earlier today in the car, which is, we cover some crazy cases, Joel. I mean, there's, you know, it's just the reasoning behind these murders or the excuses. It's just the whole situation in this case. Or you look at Donna Adelson and you realize she killed a man who just wanted to be a dad because she wanted her grandbabies in Miami. It's just like, people kill for the dumbest reasons. And it you know, and the horrible thing is, lives are forever affected, children especially. A lot of cases we cover, we see that kids are the ones who are given the heaviest burden to carry for the rest of their lives because adults are selfish and stupid. And we're just seeing that over and over. And people need to start watching true crime and realize you're not going to get away with it. Don't be taking away parents because you got issues or you're broke and you're drowning in debt. It just blows my mind every time I start covering a case, because 9 times out of 10, it's just going to be for some really stupid reason that unfortunately breaks a lot of hearts for the rest of their lives. And all selfish people, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it's usually the kids almost always that are the victims. I just want to throw in a selfish plug, which is earlier in the week, we had a former deputy warden at Brian Koberger's future prison, which is the Idaho Maximum Security Institution, as well as a former inmate. And they talk about Brian Koberger's life in prison. And if there was ever an advertisement for not committing crimes, so you don't have to go to prison. That's the thing I don't get, G-Money, is that these people commit crimes. They don't think about the repercussions. But for both Corey Richens and Brian Koberger, two completely different people and two different criminal minds, I think. But they're both going to have miserable futures. So on that note, I will thank Gigi and remind everyone, be kind. Don't kill anyone. Love you, America. Love you, Greenville, South Carolina. And love you, Park City, Utah. Justice for Eric Richens. And this trial is going to be fascinating, but I think pretty one-sided. And I think Corey is going to have a very, very rude awakening for the remainder of her life. Thanks again to G Money, host of Pretty Lies and Alibis. Check it out. It is an amazing podcast. We will see you on the flip side.